Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Kania. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from USA Today Lions Wire. And this is the official podcast of USA Today Lions Wire, where we talk about all things Detroit Lions. I don't know how many times I could say Lions at the beginning of a podcast, but I think it's important we drive the message home early.
Right.
So, Lions are coming off of nothing. They had a bye week last week. Maybe they're coming off of a little vacation
healing
from around the globe.
Yeah, they're getting healthier.
Well, kind of. We've got quite a list here on the injury report.
Sure. And
starts with Theo Riddick with his knee. Now, this is bothersome to me due to one of my fantasy football teams because I picked him up. Now I had to drop him, and I've picked up LeGarrette Blount. There's nothing to pick up in this league. No, it's bad. Everything's bad.
Well, you know, the thing that is concerning for me is I don't remember him getting hurt.
They doesn't seem to have happened in the game.
Right. And because he didn't get injured in the game, it means he got injured in some other fashion. Now, the fact that he's not given, because of the designation he's given, it means he more than likely got injured while doing something football related. Or he would have
football move.
Yeah. I mean, it was either working out or at the facility or something along those lines. But it's a bit unknown. And because we don't know how he got hurt or when he got hurt, there's a lot of question marks surrounding it. So he didn't practice this week at all. So no surprise, he will not be in the game this Sunday.
All right. Number two, no shock to anyone. My record stays solid. Ziggy Ansah, the shoulder.
Yeah, limited all week. That he carries a questionable tag. And that's legit. Like I really don't know which way he's going to go. 50-50 on. He's done limited all week and then not played a couple of times already this year. So who knows right now, unfortunately.
Next up, TJ Lang, who finds himself back at practice.
Limited Wednesday, practiced in full Thursday, and again on Friday. So practicing again in full on Friday is an indication that he cleared concussion protocol. And so he should be good to go. Still gets that questionable designation, which is common whenever someone coming off a concussion, carries into that next week. But looks like he's going to be ready. He's going to be ready to play, and it's a big game for him to come back. There's a lot of things to take into consideration here when we look at the Dolphins' defensive line. So it's nice to have the Pro Bowler back.
All right, Michael Roberts might be coming back.
Yeah, and again, that's not a surprise. Yeah, he was on the same schedule as Lang. Limited Wednesday, full practice the last 2 days. He told Michael Rothstein of ESPN that he was having no issues with his knee, and it was just a matter of him getting back into NFL football shape. So he seemed encouraged that he was going to be back. And the fact that they moved on from Hakeem Velez before the bye, is, again, an indicator that they thought he would be ready to go this week. So, again, not surprising. Carey's questionable. Should be good to go.
Kerryon Johnson, full participant in practice.
Yeah, and no designation. He's good.
Tease Tabor with the groin.
Same thing. Him, Johnson, Tabor, and you're going to get the Tavon Wilson, the same thing.
His bad back.
Yeah, he hurt his back in the Packers game in the Dallas game. And missed the Packers game. But all three of these guys were full participants all week. No injury designation. They should all be good to go.
Quandre Diggs with his hand. We'll see him Sunday.
Yeah, not on the injury report, which is a bit of a surprise.
100% healthy.
He has that cast on his hand, but he doesn't end up on the designation report. So good to know.
Jamal Agnew with the knee has been placed on injured reserve.
Yeah, he won't be back for at least 8 weeks. The word around campus there is that he's probably going to be likely one of their two spots where they can bring a guy back. It probably will be him, but we'll see. I mean, that's a December return for him. So
yeah, last three games.
Yeah, but I mean, he's a good enough player that if you are going to get three games out of him, then that's what you get.
Andy Jones on the PUP list.
Yeah, but he started practicing this week, and that's the real trick with him is that he's now opened up a window. So to briefly explain how the PUP rules work, After 6 weeks on the PUP list, the team has to make a decision on what to do with a player. And in this case, it's with the Lions. It's Andy Jones. They have to either start practicing him, which he's not allowed to do in the first 6 weeks. But now that 6 weeks have come up, they either have to start practicing him, or they can release him with an injury settlement, or they can put him on IR and then pay his full salary. But with Andy Jones, they started to put him in the soon-to-practice category. Now, once he's in that eligible-to-practice category, he now has 3 weeks to actually practice. Now, he's already met that. He's already practiced. So that means that window has now closed, and he's now on to the next window, which is they have now, once he's practicing, they have another 3 weeks to decide, are you going to activate him to the regular roster? Are you going to cut him? Or are you going to put him on injured reserve and pay his entire salary? So they're in that next window. So we'll see what happens with him over the next 3 weeks. But I have a feeling it's going to be 3 weeks, and then he'll probably be waived.
All right. Worth noting, although he's not injured, Eli Harold was on paternity leave for a few days there. He's fine. He'll be playing.
Yeah, he missed the Packers game because of it, and then the bye week gave him an extra week with the family. Really neat story from Justin Rogers where they talked about how his wife was supposed to give birth on a Wednesday, and the Lions allowed him to go attend the birth of his child, and then his wife had complications, and they delayed it, and then it was supposed to be Thursday, and then she had complications again, and they pushed it back again because of... they had issues at the hospital, and then she ended up not giving birth till Friday morning, and then they allowed him a third day off, and then with no days practicing and late nights and stuff with the family and all that stress that goes with having kids, the Lions just said, take the week, take the bye week, and then come back, and he's been back and fully practicing. So neat situation where he's, you know, has a nice healthy child now. And the Lions really did right by him in giving him that time, basically a full week.
What a world we live in now.
Yeah, you know, it's very different. Like, that would have been unheard of even a few years ago.
Sure.
But good on the Lions.
Especially when you only have 16 days that really matter during the work year.
Right.
Although all the practices matter, but only 16 days really matter.
Right. And but, I mean, this backs up and falls right in line with what Patricia has said from day one, is that it's a family-first organization, and they care about your family before they care about football. And they illustrated that with this situation. And, you know, he talked about the 49ers trading him and him not feeling like he was part of that group and feeling more at home here in Detroit. And, I mean, like I said, the Lions did right by him here.
Well, let's see how these practices work out in the long run. All right, sure. Players that were added. Trevor Bates, linebacker, promoted up to the active roster.
Yeah, Agnew goes on IR, frees up a roster spot. Trevor Bates steps in. Bates is a backup Mike linebacker. If you remember, he had a good preseason, specifically on special teams. But then in the Cleveland game, he just did bad. And when he did bad in that Cleveland game, he went from being talked about being a player who was likely to sneak into the 53 to being outside of the 53, ended up on the practice squad, has been there the whole time. But if you remember, we released Marquez Flowers last week, and Flowers was primarily a special teamer, and he was not really doing great from a special teams perspective. Enter Trevor Bates here, who did well on special teams all throughout the preseason, and he seems to be the guy that's going to take Flowers' role as a primarily probably a special teamer.
All right, finally, Garrett Dooley is another linebacker added to the practice squad.
Yeah, so Bates moves up, opens up a spot on the practice squad. Dooley steps in. Dooley is an interesting guy. Played at Wisconsin. He played as an off-the-ball linebacker, but then with injuries at Wisconsin, he shifted to basically like their version of the Jack linebacker. He can do both, and that's what makes him really interesting for Detroit. He's a guy that I actually liked. I had a sixth or seventh round grade on him going into the draft. He went undrafted and signed with Minnesota. I like him. I think the potential's there. If anything, it's nice to have a backup Jack linebacker that they can develop behind Kennard and Eli Harold.
All right, so next up we're going to talk about five Lions who should get more opportunities, we'll say, starting this Sunday. Number one, no surprise to anyone with the injuries to both Jamal Agnew and Theo Riddick, Amir Abdullah will get more touches, whether it be returning kicks or in the backfield.
Yeah, I wrote this before either of those things happened, too. I thought Amir
clairvoyant.
But I thought Amir should start getting touches regardless of Riddick and regardless of Agnew. If you're going, my argument here was if you're going to keep him active on kick returns, then you should at least give him a shot in the backfield. And I compared LeGarrette Blount's success versus carry-on success, and how I felt like Blount was succeeding in situational roles, but there were other roles where he wasn't succeeding in, and you could give some of those snaps to Abdullah. Even if it's only a handful of snaps a game, I think he deserves to at least get that opportunity.
Crosby should get more snaps at guard, or get snaps at guard. Now, this is interesting because how many snaps does Crosby even have on the year? Isn't it mostly just on special teams, on extra points and field goals?
He has zero snaps on offense and zero snaps on special teams.
Okay, so he's never even been out there on special teams, although active for every game.
Correct. Active every game, has not seen the field in an NFL regular season game. But I feel like he has expanded his role during the preseason. He's played at both right and left tackle in the preseason. And his future could be at guard. A lot of the stuff that, when we talked about this, I think, last week, a lot of what he did at Oregon was it translates to the guard position in the NFL and what the Lions do with the guard position. And it's possible he's getting snaps there. We don't know because we don't get to see that portion of practice. But if he's not, I think he should, because there's some skills that translate to that position. And if he's more flexible, there's more opportunity for him, more opportunity for the team. And he's a good enough player that his future could be inside at guard as opposed to outside at tackle. But I think he should, at least if he's not getting some now, he should be getting some soon.
All right, next, Ziggy Ansah should get more snaps inside. Now, this is only if he reaches the caveat of actually playing in the game.
Right, and this is in two parts. One, I think if he's inside, he gives a more pressure dynamic to the interior, which is something they're lacking right now.
It's going to be rougher on that shoulder, though.
It will. It will, absolutely. But the second part of this is that I think Akwara has done enough to show that he deserves to be on the field as much as they can get him. And pushing Ziggy inside can allow that Akwara. If they bring Ansah back and they keep him at that seven technique defensive end spot and they don't move him inside, Akwara basically is going to be relegated to a reserve role and then then in that NASCAR defense when they're on third downs and obvious passing situations. And I think Akwara has proven that he deserves a little bit more than that, and I think you can get him more by pushing Ansah inside in certain situations.
All right, Brandon Powell should be active and see the field.
Yeah, and this is
Your preparing to replace Golden Tate.
Well, this was my preparing to replace Agnew, because I wrote this before Agnew went on IR, I was kind of anticipating that he was going to be out a little bit of time, and Powell is a guy that I think has the most explosion of the options to replace Agnew. Golden Tate is obviously your best option, but Golden Tate is such a valuable contributor to what they do on offense. I'm not sure if they would be willing to risk Golden. Like, Golden is, I think, like the third is the third highest active punt returner amongst all active, like, you know, players in the NFL. He has the third highest yards per average. He's an excellent punt returner.
Wait, third highest the third yards highest per return. Yards third per return. Highest total yards. Third highest returns.
The third highest yards per return of active players. Okay. But, because he was a Pro Bowl punt returner in Seattle. But he's so valuable on offense.
I was nodding for anybody who couldn't hear that at all.
But he's so valuable on offense, I don't know if they'd be willing to risk him there. Now, they've utilized him there situationally in, like, big moments in the past. But I don't think he's the guy that you want back there all the time. The next person with the most experience is TJ Jones. And while he's probably the most reliable, he's not very...
flashy.
Exactly. And flashy is what you get with Powell. And the third option would be Amir. But Amir hasn't done punt returns since 2012, I think it was, or something like that, when he was a sophomore or freshman in college.
I was
going to
say, I remember 2012. I remember him being in Spartan Stadium. He was not in the NFL at that time.
And so, you know, they say Amir's taken punt return snaps in practice, but practice and live bullets are totally different. So I think Powell provides some flash. He's a little riskier, though, but... And if you're going to put him at, if you're going to get him active and you're going to have him doing punts, why not put some wrinkles in on offense as well? He can fill the Jamal Agnew role on offense. The little gadget plays that they have for Jamal, you can give those to Powell and have the, you should have similar success.
Finally, Walker should get snaps in the slot.
I love Tracy Walker's ability to play in the slot. We saw what he could do in San Francisco, covering that running back in the slot and got that pick. They haven't used him in the slot really since. They've relegated him to deep safety and moved Quinn into slot coverage roles. But I'd like for them to move Walker back into the slot. I think he has some potential. And with Agnew going on the shelf here, this is another opportunity where I'd like to see a young player get a chance to replace an established player in somewhere that he's shown potential. And this is... I really think it's kind of a sneaky move. I mean, like, his best game in college was against Texas A&M when he covered Kirk in the slot, and he was great in that game. And he has that ability to cover in the slot. He's not going to be great in certain situations, but he can hang up over top of a tight end or a running back without an issue, and that's a great role for him.
All right, now through 5 weeks, do you want to talk about the snap counts?
Let's hit some highlights.
I guess that it's good news that four guys on the offensive line are at 100% of snaps.
Yeah.
So that's a bit of continuity there. And only two other guys with significant amount of snaps at all. So a six-man unit, not bad. Yep. Usually that would spell for a better overall record than 2-3. But it
translates into pressures, and the Lions are still the second least pressured team because of their success on the offensive line. I was a bit surprised that Wiggins has had more snaps than Lang, but really, I guess he missed two full games and then most of a third. So it does make sense. Wiggins has had a little bit more.
Now I'm looking through these numbers really quickly.
Yeah,
none of them stand out to me.
Excuse me, Theo Riddick is actually the leading snap getter amongst the running backs. That was
but
a
they were
bit
playing
surprising.
Behind a lot. Remember that's, the San Francisco game?
And that's correct.
So
he had 40 something snaps in the first game.
Yeah, they were behind the whole time in that game.
And so that definitely skewed things. But Kerryon gets around 40%. LeGarrette Blount gets around 25%. And I know that they're getting equal touches, but I get questions about this all the time. Why are they using Blount and Kerryon equally? Well, they're getting touches equally, but they're not being utilized on the field equally. Kerryon is still on the field in more situations than Blount is.
So there's a little carryover, but there's a little overlap. If Theo and Kerryon are right about 40 and Blount's at 26, so there's been a couple plays where two of them have been on the field together.
Yeah.
Well, I don't remember a lot of those plays.
It's
a small number.
Yeah, it's only like 5%. But they've done this and it's at Belor actually has like 9% as well.
But he could be out there alone. He could be out there with somebody else.
Right, but I'm saying that adds to the element of them having multiple backs. I think they're doing it more than we think because they're splitting backs out instead of having two behind the line. It's easy to identify that when there's two back there, but when they're splitting Theo out or they're splitting Johnson out, I don't think the two back thing is going away either. I expect it to stay at that like 15%, maybe even get up closer to 20 as well.
All right, moving on, comparing the first five games of 2018 to 2017, at least offensively, the team's been gaining a little bit more yardage, doing slightly better. Everybody's numbers seem to be up, except for the group of tight ends for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
The running game's been better. Uh-huh. I'm surprised Golden Tate is doing so much better. I know he's had a strong start, but I didn't realize it was that much better than the first five games of last year.
I think, and I think what's neat about this article that Jeff wrote here is that, you know, we look at last year's team as that, you know, 9-win team that, you know, was right on the verge of making the playoffs, and we think about how great of an offense they were, and then this offense looks subdued compared to that, and the record is, you know, last year we were 3-2, now we're 2-3, but the offense is actually playing better, and I think a lot of that is because of that run game. You know, we're over 100 yards, almost 100 yards more over 5 weeks, which is a large amount, 20 yards a game, right? And that's on actually fewer carries. The touchdowns are up. The yards per carry are up. Everything, that whole running back dynamic is really, it's really elevated this offense to have more success than I think we're giving them credit for, because we're so used to seeing them all wheeling and dealing, throwing the ball all over the place. Now that we're having success on the ground and not throwing as frequently, I think people are not actually, it's not actually registering all the time that we're actually seeing some pretty good offense from Detroit.
All right, let's move on to a little bit of a game preview, this time against the Miami Dolphins here in Week 7. Now, what is this paper you got here? What kind of bond is this? This is like a thick piece of paper.
I have, there's just two.
30 bond? I don't even know what's better.
There's two different kinds. I'm intermixed them on accident. So
this is what happens when you end up in the press box for Lions games. You get better quality of paper. It's what it feels like anyways. It's a very significant piece of paper.
Let me check the line, because I think the bet line changed.
So all right, well, I'll start about talking about referee Jerome Boger, 14.67 flags per game, league average 13.75. Holding pretty strong there. Now, I want a game with a ref. We're not going to see it, because I think they all kind of try to regress towards the mean as the season goes on. But I want a ref that like averages either 18 flags a game or like 9 flags a game. Somebody that's way off the average. Because every game, it seems to be within one flag of the average. Here, it's slight. Well, yeah, it's right under. It's .92. And out on the broadcast, we got Dick Stockton and Mark Sklareth. Definitely not the best crew you could have.
No.
And it's a 1 o'clock tilt.
I don't mind Schlereth. I mean, he's.
I've had enough of him.
He's okay.
Had enough of his reliever son, you know.
Right.
And the betting line is now Detroit by 2.5. That's because of the word of Brock Osweiler starting at quarterback.
Yep.
That was really worth 6 points.
It actually started out even, and I think that I read that wrong. It's very interesting that you have a team that has a losing record going in to a team's house that has a winning record, two games above 500, and the visiting team is favored by 2.5. That is an interesting stat line, because it speaks to the Miami Dolphins team and kind of how what they're doing on paper isn't translating it necessarily to their wins. They seem to be playing almost above what they're expected to be capable of, or what they've shown to be capable of from a statistical standpoint. So, and then Detroit's the opposite. You know, we don't know exactly what Detroit's getting, and then add in the fact that Detroit's coming off a bye. I get that they're favored, but it's very odd. You don't often see the team with the losing record favored on an away game.
Weather. 87 and rainy. I don't know what part of the day is supposed to be rainy. Yeah. Probably favors the Lions, I guess. I mean, because it's Brock Osweiler starting at quarterback, but even in nice weather, I guess that favors the Lions. Let's go position by position.
Yeah.
I got to watch it. I have something to say when we come to our predictions about this game. But
let's talk about their record first.
Well, they're 4-2.
Yep. Okay.
They're led by Adam Gase, former Spartan.
Oh, right. Former, didn't he coach for he was a Lions coach way back in the day, too.
Yeah, he was a Lions coach way back in the day. I believe he was just a grad assistant as a Spartan.
Okay.
3-0 at home, where they beat over the first 3 weeks, they started 3-0, beat the Titans, Jets, and Raiders. Then, of course, they lose to the Patriots and Bengals, and then have the big overtime win against the Bears on Sunday, which most of us got to see if you were watching at home.
Yeah, very interesting game, because the Bears seem to have that game in hand, and then gave up a couple of, you know, I guess uncharacteristic big plays to Osweiler and Albert Wilson. All of a sudden they get back in it. Then they get to overtime. Kerryon Drake fumbles on the goal line in overtime, which almost costs them the game. But then the Bears kicker doesn't convert. And then Miami gets it. And Miami gets down. And Miami converts as time winds off the clock. And so, man, what a strange game that no one seemed to want to win. But it goes to Miami, which is actually, in the long run, a good thing for the Lions.
All right, so all their wins are by one score or less. All their losses by double digits.
Yeah, their scoring average is 21.7.
It's pretty poor. Helps the Lions.
But they're giving up 24.2.
That's what happens when you have a couple blowout losses.
Yeah, and again, and that's the strange thing, is that this is a team two games above 500, but they are giving up 3 points a game more than they're getting.
So you know what this kind of reminds me of a little bit? Remember Marinelli? I want to say it's his first year, or maybe it was his second year, where he starts 6-3, and I'm sitting there that whole season. I'm like, I don't know how this is. How are they 6-3? This team's bad. This isn't a good team. And then they only win one game over the rest of the season, end up going 7-9, and then the rest is history.
Didn't this Dolphins team last year go like 4-2 out of the gate, and then only win two of their last 10?
Maybe Gase is just like a strong starter.
I mean, I see.
Runs out of gas early.
I'm just memory. I could be wrong. But I believe they were 6-10 last year, and they started out strong and then collapsed after week six.
Well, let me check with the crack research team on this.
But it's a very interesting team. Right now, this is how the Dolphins are winning. The Dolphins are winning because, one, they have the ability to make the big play on offense. Two, they have excellent field position because of their special teams. They're getting the ball in plus areas because of their kick returner, Jakeem Grant. They're also executing with their special teams better. And then the third reason is they're winning the turnover battles. They have 11 interceptions, which leads the NFL. So interceptions, field position, and then big plays are what's winning them these games. But those are not things that are sustainable. When you look at the team overall, the collection of where they succeed in the areas that are more consistent on a week-to-week basis, they really don't look as strong. So that's why I think the Dolphins are so hard to really pin down on what kind of team they are, is because they're winning on they have a lot of things working for them right now in those kind of odd areas.
All right. Let's go position by position, starting at the quarterback position. Ryan Tannehill out, so we're going to see Brock Osweiler instead. I have a long-running bet with a friend of mine that he took Case Keenum. I took Brock Osweiler right out of college, who's going to be the better NFL QB. I led for a good 7 years, and now I'm resoundingly losing as time goes on. All right, he started against the Bears, 28-44, threw for 380 yards. It was a career best.
Yeah, 3 touchdowns, 2 picks. You know, he had a very poor, I don't know, average first half. And then the second half, he played very well. And played decent in overtime as well. But with Brock Osweiler, you're going to get ups and downs. You're going to get a half where you're like, wow, he looks like an NFL quarterback. And then you're going to get another half where he's like, I can't believe this guy's an NFL quarterback. And that up, and he's going to throw YOLO plays. He's gonna throw plays that should get picked off, and then they don't, or maybe they do. There's a lot of inconsistency from him, and so it's really, part of that bet line is what Osweiler are you going to get? Because from drive to drive, it can vary on which one shows up.
No, history states that doesn't really help the Lions. Yeah. Moving on to the running back position, Kenyon Drake and Frank Gore.
Yeah, it's a two-man rotation. Frank Gore is actually their starter, and Drake is their change of pace guy. But, I mean, really, Drake is the guy that you need to be worried about. Yes, Frank Gore went over 100 yards against the Bears
great.
Last week.
It was great. Ran out of gas on the goal line. Disaster ensued.
Yeah, right. But see, like 41 of his yards were in overtime, though, right? Or 47 of his yards. So he went for 101.
Very prolific.
But almost half of them came in overtime. And if that game's not in overtime, his stat line looks a lot less impressive, I guess.
I don't know, but he's more impressive because they got to play that overtime. He's 35 years old.
Right? I mean, look, there's a reason why I thought he would be a great addition in Detroit, and I don't want to knock him too much. But I also don't want us to crown him as the Frank Gore of 10 years ago either. Like, he's still a 35-year-old back, and Drake is your home run hitter, and they have a nice combination working, and Drake is a good pass catcher, and I'm more worried about Drake than I am about Gore, even though Gore is their starter.
We'll have two different reasons why. Go ahead with yours.
Well, I'm more scared of Drake because he has that home run hitting ability. He has excellent hands, and he's a guy that could be a potential matchup problem for the Lions.
Mine is just because when he fumbled on the goal line, he was destroyed, devastated, maybe in tears. We don't know.
Yeah.
And that means he cares. And that's not good because he might want to respond by having a huge game on Sunday.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he came back and he had another carry in overtime that got them into field goal position.
Not enough.
So. But it's an interesting...
He's still bummed out after the game.
It's an interesting dynamic. If this game doesn't go to overtime, the running backs don't look as impressive as they do right now.
All right, wide receiving core, maybe a more or less average core of Kenny Stills, Albert Wilson, and Danny Amendola.
Yeah, the big thing here is there's a lot of speed. And they're not exceptional receivers in any one area. Oh, well, I guess Albert Wilson's pretty good at the yak, right? But Stills is your stretcher. He's the guy that's gonna run the nine route and just go. And so you got to worry about him from a speed standpoint. Wilson is basically Golden Tate, right? Amendola is another slot guy, and then you have Hakeem Grant, who, as I mentioned earlier, their kick returner, punt returner, is also a very elite weapon, but he's very small. So you've got three basic guys that are like slot return guys, and one outside threat. So they don't have a Kenny Golladay on this team, right? But they've got other weapons, and these weapons are really fast. So Stills had a down game. He didn't catch a ball until overtime last week, but he's their deep threat. Wilson is really the guy that has been the catalyst for their offense. When he's done well, the team has found success. When he's not done well, the team has lost. They average, I think, 17 points a game when Wilson is not having a good game. So he thinks he's the best yak guy in the NFL. I think Golden Tate would have an argument with him about that. Amendola is their reliable veteran that they like to go to. But you got to worry about Wilson's, just like they have to worry about Golden Tate, and you have to worry about Grant with his speed option. And then, like I said, it's kind of unclear how they're going to match guys up. If I thought they were going to match people up, I would say Stills is probably going to draw Slay. But I don't know if you necessarily need to do that this week because, like you alluded to at the beginning, it's not an overly – they don't have a dominant number one. They got a lot of guys who are okay. So I don't know if they'll shadow slay on anyone. It just might be play the guy across from you.
All right, tight ends. A.J. Derby, Jack Nicklaus's grandson, Nick O'Leary, Mike Gesicki, a second-round draft pick, and Durham Smythe, who I believe is not related to hockey legend Conn Smythe.
Oh, yeah. He played Notre Dame, though, so I figured you'd like him. Derby missed last week with a foot injury. He should be back this week. When he missed last week, the thought process was the second-round pick Gesicki would step up. He didn't. Nick O'Leary did. O'Leary had a career game with four catches. So now Derby's back, and they're expecting him to cut into Gesicki's time. So They're a lot like Detroit, where they've got four guys and none of them are great.
Yeah, moving on. Offensive line, Laremy Tunsil, Ted Larson, Travis Swanson, ex-Lion Travis Swanson, Jesse Davis, and Juwan James from left to right.
This is a good tackle group. Both Tunsil and James are good tackles who didn't start off their careers well, but have established.
Tunsil really stumbled into the league.
And James, too, took a while. But both those guys are good. Swanson took over at center when Kilgore got injured in week four. He's done well since. Their backup to Swanson is Wesley Johnson, who was with the Lions all training camp. So they're a little bit weak on the interior. Larson's aging. Jesse Davis is meh. But their tackles could be a bit of a problem. This spells good matchup for Deshaun Hand again. And, you know, but this group collectively didn't allow a sack against the Bears. And
that's surprising.
That is very surprising. Strong. And so Detroit, you know, Detroit is what, third in the NFL in sacks? I think Chicago was two, or tied with us or something, right? So the fact that they held the Bears off was impressive. We'll see what happens with Detroit. You know, they scheme pressure, so let's see what kind of schemes they can come up with here on defense. Like I said, weakness on the interior, so it could help them. Again, if you're going to put Ansa on the inside, like I was talking about earlier, it'd be a good matchup for him on the interior.
All right, the defensive line coach is Chris Kocurek, former Detroit Lions defensive line coach.
Yeah.
On the outside, on the defensive line, they have Cameron Wake, formerly of the CFL, and Robert Quinn, who, if this was 2012, pretty frightening pair of defensive ends.
Right. And Quinn is good. Cameron Wake had a knee surgery, and it was supposed to keep him out 2 to 4 weeks, and he's back a week later. But, you know, Wake is also a guy who came off an Achilles and, like, played in 3 months or something ridiculous like that. So Wake is a notorious quick healer. But I'm sure he's going to be limited. I'm sure there's going to – he was limited a little bit in practice this week, had a full practice finally today. He's a guy who was a 10-sack defensive end a year ago. He's only had one sack this year so far. He's 35. It's someone – they're going to have to pay attention in the ends, that's for sure. Charles Harris, the backup for Wake, injured himself last game. He's out. So they're injured. Their reserves are injured on the outside.
All right, in the middle, Akeem Spence, former Lion, Vincent Taylor, Devon Godshaw.
Yeah, this is, again, I'm not overly impressed with this group, but they're quick, and they combine well with what Kocurek wants to do. So it'd be interesting to it's a good, I mean, I guess you'd call it a revenge game for Spence, but
a lot of revenge game.
But you know what? You have
the ex-Dolphins, do we have?
Well, they have a lot of ex-Detroit Lions, that's for sure. And they, I mean, look, they gave up Sue and then didn't add anyone because they thought Vincent Taylor could step up. So, I don't know. I mean, this group, they've played well. There's some quickness. But the Lions have a very good offensive line. So, we'll see how this handles. If they can handle the quickness and keep Stafford clean, it's a good situation for them.
Manning the middle for the Dolphins is Raekwon McMillan.
He is a bit slow. I know a lot of Detroit Lions.
Because he went to Ohio State.
No. I liked him. I actually liked him a lot, but he's slow. And he's good for a 4-3. Would have been. He's probably better as an interior 3-4. But he's not going to. He's not a sideline to sideline player, and he's not a guy who's going to cover. So this would have been a good game for Theo Riddick. Well, so whoever gets those passing. Receptions as the running back, whether it's Amir Abdullah or Kerryon Johnson, if they can get a matchup against McMillan, that's a win for the Lions.
All right, on the outside, Kiko Alonso and Jerome Baker.
Yeah, Kiko's really good. I mean, he has 61 tackles. That's second in the league right now. They use him in a lot of different ways, and he's been successful in a lot of ways. Jerome Baker is a third-round draft pick. He's more of a linebacker-safety type hybrid, kind of like Killebrew is. But he's out there. He's doing well and getting tackles for them. They're better in coverage, but they're still not great. I still think there's advantages for the Lions in the slot and with their running backs against this group because I think this group can't match up with the athleticism of Detroit.
All right. In the secondary with the corners, we have Xavien Howard, Bobby McCain, and Cordrea Tankersley.
Howard is their guy, right? Howard has 3 picks. He's been playing very well. he will match up against whichever line is playing the best. And so that probably means Marvin Jones right off the bat. But man, Kenny Golladay has proven to be a monster when you put a non-number one corner on him. And teams have adjusted and shifted corners over him. When that happens, it opens up spots everywhere else. So while they have Howard, McCain is coming off an injury. And it'll be interesting to see how they adjust their secondary to deal with the three wide receivers that Detroit has.
All right, and the safeties are Minkah Fitzpatrick, Rashad Jones, and T.J. McDonald.
Yeah, and McDonald's a bit hurt, but this is another good group. Fitzpatrick is really good. I mean, he's their first-round pick for a reason. He's potential defensive rookie of the year right now. He's playing so well. So he's a guy you have to be aware of. And collectively, this group, remember, this I said at the top, this group has 11 interceptions. And that's part of the reason why they're succeeding. But if Detroit can keep a clean pocket and Stafford can keep the interceptions down, he's only thrown one interception since the Jet game. So if he doesn't throw interceptions to this opportunistic defense, that takes away one of the big things that they're building their success on. So Stafford not turning the ball over will be a big key for this game.
All right. The kicker, Jason Sanders. The punter, Matt Hack.
Yeah, you know, it's average punter, as you would expect. Sanders has played well for a rookie. He's made all his field goals, only missed an extra point. And he kicked the game winner last week, so good for him.
All right, we got to do a prediction. I lead the season series 3-2, meaning I also lead the all-time series 11-10, right?
Oh, probably. I don't know.
Were you 8-8 last year?
Yeah, that sounds right.
All right, so what do you like, or do you want me to go first?
I want you to go first since you're winning.
Right, well, oh, it's my honor. The Osweiler thing makes me nervous because we can only beat Hall of Fame quarterbacks this season. We can't handle teams without the greatest guy under center. Kenyon Drake thing. I'm big into the revenge. His is redemption type of game. And since I know you're going to pick the Lions, I'm going to go Dolphins 24, Lions 21. This is a road game against a 4-2 team, albeit played two stinkers, played four kind of decent games.
You said 21?
24-21.
All right. I said 24-20, and I did pick the Lions. I do think this team coming off the bye is going to be a force. I think the bye really is
galvanized the team.
I think the bye gives them a distinct advantage. For a team that schemes to play against an opponent, that is the extra week to prepare is a big advantage for them. Now, they've got to be more sound on special teams, but man, if Stafford doesn't take away the picks, that's a big if he doesn't throw interceptions, that's a big advantage for Detroit.
All right. Well, we did it again. We're going to have to blow through these questions because we're 42 minutes in already. All right. So we're going to start with Louis Nicolai.
Yeah.
Does it look like Ziggy will miss another game? I will say yes.
I will say
maybe not this one, but yes.
I think he's back this week. That's my guess as of right now. It's a 50-50, but I'm leaning yes.
I'll go with you. Ryan. And Lyle Klo, remember, we said the name right? Clough, Klo, had similar questions. What's the plan to replace Theo as a receiver and as a pass blocker?
I think they're going to give some of those snaps, or most of those snaps, to Abdullah, but I do think they're going to give some of Theo's snaps to Kerryon Johnson and expand Kerryon's role a little bit as well. I think we're going to... I think it would be foolish of us to think that Amir is going to just come in and take all of Theo's reps, because that's a significant amount of reps. I do think that they will expand Kerryon's role this week.
Mary Lamos, if Abdullah and Powell are both active, do you see them being used for more than punt returns, perhaps taking some of the load if Reddick is out?
Yeah, I do. I do think they will play. We have... I just talked about how I think Amir will get more shots. And I think Powell, his shot will be dependent on if they have a room for a gadget play. So if they have a situation where they would have liked to have used Agnew, I think they can incorporate Powell into that.
Killa B, I think the Lions should turn Kerryon Johnson to a three-down back or give Amir another shot in the lineup instead of Blunt. Why do you think they keep using Blunt and underusing Johnson?
Again, we kind of talked about this before. I think they're not underusing Johnson necessarily. I think
16 games is a lot of games.
I think they're trying to manage him, and I think
for Rook.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a long rookie offseason for him, and he basically has not stopped playing football since his last year in college, and I think they're trying to manage that. I do think they will expand his role a little bit. I do think he's a three-down back, regardless of how much he's used. But Blount is part of the equation. He's going to be a guy that gets touches to eliminate some of the load off Kerryon. And as we just talked about in the last two questions, I do think Amir will get another shot this week.
Saint Stafford, what do you think Kerryon Johnson's ceiling is? Also, Galladay's and Hands.
Well, I think...
Oh, I wonder where this one's going to go.
Well, I do think Kerryon has the potential to develop into a three-down back, like Killer B was just asking about. I don't think it'll be this year, but I think he has the potential to be the guy next year, and I think that's coming. Galladay can develop into a number one. We've talked about that for a few weeks, and I think Hand is... It's still a little bit early on Hand. I think he has a really good upside to his game. I don't think he's ever going to be like a 10-sack interior lineman like some of the other guys, but he fits this system so well. I think he's a guy who's going to get sacks. He's going to get turnovers. And if he can develop some of his run game stoutness, man, the potential's really there for him to have a really nice career. And... I don't know if we'll ever get a Pro Bowl out of it, but I think he's in the defensive rookie of the year conversation right now. So,
all right. So, way to Patel. How do Lions wide receivers match up against the Dolphins secondary?
Yeah, we talked about that just a second ago. Howard is the guy that they're going to put out there and try and take away, the top guy. But who is the top guy? And if you guard one, there's going to open up opportunities for others. So. I think the Lions match up well, as they will against most secondaries throughout the rest of the season.
All right. Corey LeGros, why haven't we thrown to the tight ends more?
It's design.
They're just not that good.
Yeah, well, yeah, that too. The design is to feed the wide receivers. And so you feed the wide receivers, you got to take away from somebody else, and they've elected to take away from the tight ends, which is a subpar group.
Anonymous limo driver asks, do the Dolphins continue to run all over us? What, if anything, can be done to fix the run D?
It's experience. They need that experience, right? And I think the Dolphins have the potential, especially with Drake's home run ability. I'm hoping that they won't, right? But the potential is definitely there. I think the Lions are going to have to be stout. And if they have to use linebackers to plug some holes, then that's what you'd like to see them do. But coming out of a bye, it'd be interesting to see what wrinkles the Lions have. But yeah, it's definitely a weakness that the Lions need to correct. And hopefully the only way I see correcting is just getting that experience.
Kyle Klein, is shutting down the Finns offense as simple as limiting Albert Wilson? His two worst games this season, the offense scored 17 combined points, and they lost both of those games against Cincinnati and New England. With Agnew out, who do you see covering Wilson?
That's a tough question, and if my gut says they're probably going to move Lawson inside because Lawson has the speed to hang with him, but the Lions are definitely going to be weak on the interior. They could end up trying to bracket cover him and just leave like Slay on stills and then try and bracket Wilson and not worry about some of the other guys as much and leave those one-on-one. But Wilson is definitely a dynamic player, like Golden Tate, where you have to account for him in some manner. So I'm not exactly sure. I think it'll be they'll try and put Lawson on him as much as possible, but I also think they're going to try and hang a guy over the top.
All right, Morgan Cannon, how do you think the defense looks with Agnew out? Do we see tees with Lawson inside or more three safety looks with Walker?
I think we're still going to see three safety looks because we're going to have one less up front seven guy. I do like the idea of having Walker in the slot, as I talked about earlier. In this game, I do think Lawson will be on the inside. The coach has really talked up Tease so he could be the guy on the outside. We could also see Shedd or Pimpkins on the outside. Pimpkins is a really fast runner, and if they want, they could take their fast corner and put their fast corner on their fast receiver and just let them run together. And that's one of the appeals of Pimpkins is that he can run. But it's going to be situational. I don't think there's like a clear answer that this is the move. They're going to make just one move and that's going to be it. If their next opponent doesn't have an interior slot guy, then Lawson might be back on the outside again. It'll just depend. And this week, though, I think Lawson might see some spots inside.
All right, Brandon Kerr, now going into the heavy third of the schedule of six games with a mini bye after the Thanksgiving Day game. Three of the games are versus the division. Do the Lions look more comfortable in all three phases for this important stretch? At Dolphins versus Seahawks, at Vikings, at Bears versus Panthers versus Bears.
I still think special teams is a problem. And I think defense is still a question mark. But I think we'll know a lot more after this game to see how they are in the back half. This is typically the turning point of where we're at. So, you know, I know we're running short on time here, buddy. Just pick what you like left to there. I think it's the same problems that we know.
All right, Steven Misalovsky. Hey, Eric, love the podcast. I knew you'd like that one. Is Jim Bob Cooter the offensive coordinator of the Lions next year? How long does Patricia hold on to Paul P. if the run defense doesn't improve, knowing he has sentimental attachment as Paul gave Patricia his start? All right, don't answer this
it's
one.
It's too early.
It's too early. That's what I was going to say. Don't
is.
Answer it.
It is.
We got to wait and see. Okay. Who knows? If Cooter stinks, he's gone. Yeah. Pasqualoni stinks, he's gone. If they're good, they're good. They're staying.
Both right. Could be scapegoats.
Andrea Steele, what would you give up for Patrick Peterson, and should the Lions trade for him?
Okay, this is a lock and fora rumor, and the one thing that I've learned is that you cannot trust lock and fora. So the owner said Peterson's not on the trade block. I think it's a non-issue. I don't think he's an option. And don't trust lock and fora is the moral of this story here.
And Steven, that was not like an angry response. It wasn't a bad question. We just got to blow through everything. BZ Ski, is Derek Johnson worth a look? Yes or no?
No.
Also, how big old would trading for Deion Buchanan be for our defense?
It's a lock and fora rumor. I don't even know if Buchanan is available. So I don't think he's even somebody we can speculate on just because I don't trust lock and fora what he has to report.
Waleed Baghdadi, with Patricia looking to bring in his type of players, would it have any potential impact on your QIB ratings? And at which position group do you feel would require the greatest adjustment?
You know, I already started making these adjustments. I made them last year before the draft, and it's a constantly evolving
thing.
Yeah, so
it's an organism.
It is, very much. They're never really settled, so I don't think there's any one position that stands out. Maybe linebacker's always been the trickiest for me, based on the types of guys they've used. But it's constantly evolving and always adjusting to the players that they have on the roster. But I'm a year into it already. So,
all right, and finally, the main man. I was curious how you thought this team stacked up against teams in recent years. I personally don't see much of a difference, and we're just losing the close games that we have become accustomed to winning. I agree with them.
Yeah, I don't think it's it's too early for me to really tell. I do see a lot of similarities, but I also think it's a new coach, it's a new system, and I have seen some variations that lead me to believe that it's not the same type of team. Caldwell, you wouldn't have seen Caldwell get a win over the Patriots or a convincing win over Green Bay.
But they would have come back and beat San Francisco
right.
And Dallas.
But
they would still be 2-3.
But that's my point, is that it in ways it looks like they're the same, but in ways that they look very different. And so I think it's a different team. It's going to take some time for them to learn. But when they learn, I think the outcomes will be better long term.
All right, the shout-outs. We got two shout-outs this week.
Yeah, we got two really nice reviews.
Very complimentary reviews.
Did I write his name down? Bad Knee Shane and
Old Lions fans.
Old Lions fans,
correct.
Let me double check this. I took Bad Knee Shane. I didn't want to misquote him, but yeah, Bad Knee Shane, Old Lions fan from PA. Man, really nice stuff. this week. We're not the guys that read the reviews. If people want to see them, they're on iTunes. But really appreciate a couple more this week. Really help us get out there, and we're starting to get a bigger community. And
the following's growing.
It's very noticing on social media. The responses we get. We appreciate everyone who's ever left a review and is leaving reviews. And if you don't, I know people have tried and they can't. And it's great. We love the fact that we're growing and that you guys are giving us the support that we need, because it helps us be motivated to put these out every week.
Yeah. And that's it. That's it for this week. We appreciate all of you listening first and foremost. And we hope you come back again next week, hopefully after another Lions win, a 3-3 rolling into week 8. And we can continue this dance down the long and winding road to 8-8.
Matt Urban at Lions Wire just wrote an article about how the Lions are still very much in the thick of the NFC race.
Oh, of course. Yeah, well,
because
NFC's not great.
Everyone has losses right now. So yeah, if you want to check that out, that'd be great.
We're still in last place in the North. All right. Until next time, let's go Lions.